and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 621.
The end of the Starbreaker supremacy, such as it is.
Yeah, and it ain't much of an ending, but at least it's an ending.
Yeah, not much of an ending to a story, and not much of an ending.
Yeah, it's, and nor do I think this is going to be a particularly long recap. I mean, not even trying to make it Kurtzky, and I think it's going to be that way anyway, because considering it's the wrap up of the story, there ain't that much really here. There's not, again, the 2025 phrase, there ain't much meat on the bone here, really.
All right, let's dive in.
I just had my drink. I'm ready for this. So we pick up with Hal and company in the Interceptor. Everybody's heading back to Oa, and this is annoying me now. What the hell's this Stewart's mother's name?
Shirley.
I just don't call me Shirley. I should have remembered that. The Shirley Stewart ring is annoying me now for some reason. Oh, but Shirley, the Shirley Stewart ring almost picks up on the fact that power connecting John to her has been severed, and she has to go find John. And they're trying to figure out what the hell the ring is talking about. They arrive on Oa and they realize all the power batteries have been lit. This is Starbreaker Supremacy Part 6. Writers Morgan Hampton, Jeremy Adams, Fernando Pissarin, penciler Claire Albert, Adriano. That font is so borderline. I'm gonna say it's Oa because of the fact that it's the same font as in the Eau Claire. I see now. It's Di Benedetto. It actually isn't. It's Di Benedetto because it carries over onto the next line. That's going. Daniel Henriquez, colorist Arif Prianto, Matt Herms, Lee Luffridge, and Trish Mulvihill. Letterer Dave Sharp, cover artist Pissarin, Albert, and Prianto. I'm not going to go through the variant covers. And the lanterns arrive, as in Hal and company arrive, to find out what the change in the status quo. For some reason, Kyle's the one that's concerned about an army of criminals having rings. Don't know. Salek tells tells Hal that John, pretty much, this was his plan, and he did everything he could to reignite the battery. Superboy, again, of all people, is the one who say that John makes it clear that John Stewart sacrificed basically his life to ignite the power batteries. At least they give Atrocitus some reason to fight with them. A borderline one saying, he sacrificed himself for all of us. So we will honor his sacrifice and fight with him or with you guys for now. At this moment, the Starbreaker Corps arrives and the lanterns light up, and they've put defensive shields over the power batteries, which is probably a smart plan. So the Starbreaker Corps eventually this reminds me of that scene in Infinity War where eventually, you know, the shields start cracking and people start making their way in to attack Wakanda. Some of the Starbreakers start making their way in, and we end up with a very, very, in my opinion, poor homage to the splash page in Green Lantern 25. When you have the lanterns fighting all the Starbreakers, there's a point where there's this Izamot like Red Lantern who gets ripped in half and he's dead. So the Red Lantern ring needs a new host, and all of a sudden, you know, Razor sees it and is like, "Oh, looking for permission from Aya to go get it because he's naturally suited to be red." So he grabs the red ring. It's the Razor we kind of remember, at least, and he unleashes the rage on one of the Sun Eaters. I like the victory is mine by Lord Fleece. That was nice. So for a few minutes, of course, everything is cool. Everybody's using constructs. Everybody's seemingly winning the fight. But we find out, that things can't be that simple, because now that they're using their emotion and they're using all these constructs, they're playing right into the hand of Starbreaker and his brethren, because they start feeding on the constructs. and absorbing all that emotional energy being used. So now all of a sudden, all the Lanterns become pretty much impotent again. They have power, but they can't do anything. Now, I love this part. Meanwhile, in an unknown location, we know where it is. It's underneath Oa. It's on Oa underneath the Citadel. But nonetheless, we hear consciousness 90% downloaded with the gauntlet in its little slot on this. What's the word I'm missing here, Chad? How would you describe this? What the gauntlet is jammed into?
Obelisk.
That's not the one I was looking for, but it is. It's better than anything I came up with. It gets a 90% downloaded. Simon, who, again, why Simon was left still alive by Krona, I don't understand. But Simon creates this big green construct hammer, smashes into the obelisk. We hear malfunction, download incomplete, rerouting. Simon gets jettisoned right out back onto the surface of Oa. Miraculously enough, as Lantern Bass smashes back into the ground near all these guardians, now all of a sudden the guardians' memories and their knowledge starts returning. And now all of a sudden they know how to stop. They know how to stop the Sun Eaters. At this point, back in the obelisk, you know, it's like, fool, you may have damaged the body I was destined to live in, patterned after your greatest hero, but I'm still reborn and Krona's mind still lives on. And you see him in kind of like a warped, toxic Avenger looking clone of Hal Jordan's body. As the battle continues on the surface of Oa, now, you know, the guardians kind of reach out to the Lantern saying, hey, we know how we can stop these guys. We just need a little bit more time. That's enough to rally the troops, literally, in this case. And the Guardians end up coming up with this, you know, this great master plan. Some reason, with the tendrils of light and all this, it becomes like moths to flames. And the Sun Eaters can't resist, like, the biggest meal they're ever going to have, which I thought they were already having that, thanks to the Sorrow Battery. But they're drawn to the power batteries, and they can't resist because they're basically going to be satiated all the time, and they're never going to want to leave. And that's the solution to this whole thing. All the Sun Eaters, including Starbreaker himself, end up supposedly permanently, a la Parallax, except they're not dormant, in the power batteries where they can basically live on the raw emotion, but supposedly that's not going to be a problem. At least Guy Gardner's bright enough, which says a lot, that he's the one who says there's got to be a better way than this. And Joe, of course, says, well, you know, maybe we'll find it, but not today. Let's just take the win. As you know, Hal, Guy, and Carol kind of reflect upon the new status quo with fireworks in the sky and kind of mourning John Stewart, we see Shirley Stewart's ring shooting into the dark sectors on this farm, and the ring cries out, John Stewart, it's time to come home. And we see the real John Stewart with a Cap Matui, and that's the end of this issue.
So, somebody tell me why it is that the Starbreakers, for like, okay, so it's 9 pages of the story, but like 6 pages of them starting their attack. There are 6 pages of them starting their attack until they realize, oh yeah, we absorb emotion, and then start right, kicking yeah. in to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it makes. One way or the other, it doesn't make any sense. Either the Lantern should have figured this out, considering what they did to the friggin' entities, or the Starbreaker should have figured out, yeah, you know, they're using constructs against us. Or here's another thing: the Lantern should have been able to figure out, you know, we can use our power to pump us up physically and not make constructs, kind of like how Hal. At least partially was taking on Mongol in that episode in that issue in Green Lantern 46, because he realized he couldn't hurt him because he was yellow. So it's like he was using the green to basically pump up his hate and pump up his rage, because for the most part, yeah, he made the armor eventually, but he knew he could never create weapons that were going to hurt Mongol. So the only way he could really go on the offensive was to just use his ring to give him physical power.
Did you ever see Wreck-It Ralph, the first one?
No. No.
So in Wreck-It Ralph, there's a very Moth to the Flame type thing where one of the games that they go into has, you know, the way the game ends is the villains, which is basically these insects, see this green pillar of light, and they're irresistibly drawn to this green pillar of light, which then destroys all of them for them to hatch in the next cycle, the next time the gamer comes through this level. So that's how they defeat the big bad, essentially, at the end of Wreck-It Ralph, is just like, you know, putting up this green flame, essentially, to lure them in, to, you know, force them to kill themselves at the end of the thing, thus saving the whole situation. So tell me why it is that the Guardians needed their memories back for this very simple, stupid plan.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. It's a very, very, very good question. And you hit the nail on the head, kind of like, you know, as I was, couldn't help but, I decided a long time ago when I assumed I was going to recap this, that I was not going to not editorialize in this one, that the plan is so stupid. It really is like having hundreds of parallaxes in these power batteries, except they're not really dormant. They're just, they're satiated because they're getting fed all the time, which also you would think would have an impact on everybody else's ability to use the emotion, because the fact that there's a draw on the battery all the time, a huge draw on the battery. It's such a stupid plan. So stupid. And yeah, let's be honest. It's not any stupider than, because Krona's machine, his regenerator, which is like 90%+ done, just the mere act of that thing being interrupted and blowing up, somehow that jump starts all the Guardians' memories and their knowledge again. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make it. Most of this issue makes no sense whatsoever. The only part I liked was the fact that we're getting the real John Stewart back, because that was the dumbest thing of all the really dumb things that Thorne did. And I'm sure Thorne, if he got to complete his 40-year plan of writing the book, would have had the two John Stewarts either merge back together or the real John Stewart come back. But I think the dumbest thing he ever did was, yeah, we're going to split and have two John Stewarts, and we're going to give you the copy. We're going to get the copy, the non-real John Stewart. And we know it's the non-real John Stewart. If we didn't know it, you know, if that turns out to be, by the way, they kind of like pull the rug out from underneath you at some point and say, by the way, you thought that was the real John Stewart, but it wasn't. Okay. I thought about this today or the other day. It kind of would be like when they did the Clone Saga and they gave the twist, which didn't stick, I think at least partially because people hated it, that the real Peter Parker wasn't really the real Peter Parker, that he had been the clone all this time, and Ben Reilly, who had been in exile, was really the real Spider-Man. That it would be like when they gave us that crappy issue that told you that Ben Reilly was really Spider-Man and Peter Parker wasn't. At the end of the issue, they make it clear, that reveal was garbage. But yet Peter Parker rides off into the sunset for like a couple of years, and we don't even read about him. But yet we're following Ben Reilly as Spider-Man, all the while knowing he's not really the real Spider-Man. That's kind of what this has been like. It's like, we know this is not John Stewart. So did Jeremy, which also, by the way, when we go back and when Jeremy told us about, there were things that DC editorial was absolutely fine with doing away with right off the bat, like off panel from the Thorne continuity, we probably can ascertain or take it to the bank that this was one of those aspects that he could have gotten done away with at any time, but he decided to work it into a story.
Yeah. My biggest frustration with all this is not necessarily the issue and the issue itself that we're talking about. It's the how this story went. So first of all, on the cover, we see Sorrow and Disgust and the other two Lanterns who aren't in this issue at all.
We haven't seen those other two since the Sorrow battery went online, right? The only one we ever saw was Sorrow. Yeah.
So in addition to that, just sliding back into it, we haven't seen Happy. Happy was theoretically supposed to be part of it, but now the Spectrum is supposedly fixed, so are we going to see him again? What was the point of seeing him? The whole thing of where is Shepherd? And then the whole Aya and Razor thing, now that they're back online, but now we're in the middle of the fight, and then all of a sudden she's saying my love to him. These two need to have a fucking conversation. Are we going to see that conversation? This bullshit explanation of dealing with the Sun Eaters by just, how many times have we seen like somebody like feeding off of power and the solution is, you know what? If they want power, give them more power so that they overload or whatever, or they're distracted by it in this case and are going to feed on it for all eternity. So we're never solving anything. We're delaying the inevitable. We're never circling back to things and dealing with them the way we're supposed to. We're introducing characters and concepts and not building off of them. I don't know what's happening anymore. I don't know what threads are important, because that's the whole point of an ongoing story. I'm supposed to be able to read an ongoing story and follow the plot point from issue to issue. And if it's a crossover, from issue to issue across series. But if I'm supposed to remember what happened last issue or whatever, as I'm reading the story, as I'm picking this up monthly, and maybe they're only writing it for the trade these days, who the hell knows? But if I'm reading as a monthly reader and supposed to remember what happens in the previous issue to pick up those threads in the next issue, what the fuck is the point of doing that if you don't even pick up on some of those threads to begin with? I don't know which ones I need to remember and focus on and which ones matter by the time we get to the conclusion. This is dumb. This is messy storytelling.
Yeah, whether you like it or not, at least now we know why they forced the whole Krona thing. They crammed it into the last like two issues of this story arc because of the fact that that was going to be the trigger for the Guardians getting their memories and their power back, or the memories and their knowledge back. Does it make any sense? I mean, I guess there's something worth exploring about why Krona wants, if things had worked perfectly, would have made a perfect clone of Hal Jordan's body as his host. I think there's lots of things to look into there analytically, especially if he's able to eventually heal this body, which would be cool, which would probably make for better stories if he actually does, because we wouldn't necessarily know that this is the Krona version. If he's able to heal the body 100%, something could happen. And either you get to reveal that it's Krona then, or something starts going on, which was my theory all along. Once we saw it was Hal, that maybe he was going to be playing off of either Hal's uniqueness because of the fact that it's something about Hal's, you know, physically was unique, kind of along the lines of the "Why can't I quit you?" as a host. Everybody seems to. Once you go Hal, you can't go back. The Krona, since he got killed by Hal, realizes there's something special about Hal Jordan's makeup, or that he was going to basically try to do rotten things in Hal Jordan's name to play on everybody's fear. Not so much necessarily their fear, but the doubts that some people might still have about whether Hal Jordan is. If there's still doubt out there about, well, you know, he did give in to parallaxing and destroyed everybody once. So it's like, can we ever 100% trust him? I know most people probably do at this point, but there are interesting questions to be asked about why he was picking Hal's body. But it almost would have been brighter or better for that whole thing to play out on its own later on and not be jammed in as a deus ex machina to give the Guardians their mojo back.
I just think we brought the entities back just to kill them.
Yeah.
And even went through the process of creating Parallax Jr., which if they just killed him the next issue, what was the point? Unless the entire point was just to make that moment that Kilowog heard something make sense because he heard whatever. So now we need to come up with an explanation for that. But either way, it's still dumb because we just killed them the next issue. Now, it's so asinine that I think they're not dead. Like that's the worst way to go about something. It's like, you can leave the mystery. Like you didn't see the body, or, you know, you didn't see the entities after the power re-entered the universe. Maybe they got re-energized or whatever. Like there's all kinds of explanation, but for your reasoning to think they can't be dead to be, because otherwise it would be stupid as hell, is poor storytelling.
Yeah, this arc was inherently disappointing. By the very concept of this, where we were going with this, there was a lot of potential there. Certainly, there was more potential in this story than there ever was in the whole Derlin Theros.
Agreed.
Theros was the name we couldn't think of, by the way. I thought of it like 5 minutes after we recorded last time. Theros, and yet. In a way, this arc is more disappointing because of the fact that it's wasted potential. It's like they didn't do very much at all with the Fractured Spectrum. You got like what, three offshoots. I guess Happy, I guess technically would be one on the positive side. But like you said, Happy just disappears. He gets written off panel. We don't see anything. We don't see Nate again after he goes into the power battery. We didn't see the other two Jokers after the Desolate Stone power battery got lit to begin with. It's like all this stuff. And then, yeah, the entities, it's like we bring them back seemingly to be killed, even though it's a lame death, because literally you only see two that could be considered dead on panel. Everybody else is just, oh, they're just dead. Kind of like the BS that, oh, Parallax is dead, even though there was never any reason to believe that, nor did Jeremy even try to throw out any reason why they believe it. Let us know why they believe it. I just don't get it, man. It's like I said, the only thing I really liked in this book was the end. Was the John Stewart thing, because of the fact that yeah, because we're getting the real John Stewart back, who we never should have not had back. So that's cool, and he's taking care of one of the, if not the messiest Thorn plot points, one of them, which was, oh yeah, John Stewart split him into two. Now, do I really think John Stewart? Do I really necessarily believe that this John Stewart, you know, the hypertime John Stewart, is necessarily really dead either? No, there's no reason to think that. We're probably going to find out that maybe there's probably a small piece of John Stewart in every one of these batteries, and maybe that's what's actually keeping the Starbreakers under control and making them, you know, even if it's like subconsciously just making them even happier, or just making sure nothing ever crosses, or if there's a way out, and there probably is, that, you know, to keep them distracted. So, I don't know. I mean, again, all these off-panel deaths get old after a while, too, especially when it flies in the face of logic. But, yeah, the entities really bother me. And that's not in...
Off-panel deaths and introductions, because remember, we got Sorrow, and we got Disgust, and we got Happy, but there were also two other Lanterns that we never got the origins for,
you're right,
either as a power or as characters. So there's that, but then there's also the fact, like, look, and you kind of hit it on the head, the best part of it is the end, because as you mentioned earlier, when we interviewed Jeremy, he was talking about editorial gave him the go-ahead to just basically, and let's just say, call a spade, like, they gave him the go-ahead to essentially just be like, oh, all that stuff that happened with Thorn, you can just say, you know, it explain it away in a narrative bubble and say we've reset by the time you start your series, and you can just do whatever the hell you want.
At least some of it. Like I said, we really don't know, and we probably, I don't know. Jerry's pretty straightforward, so again, maybe once he's done on the book, maybe if not, he would become clean enough to say, well, these were the things about the Thorn continuity I absolutely could have gotten rid of immediately if I had wanted to. But again, yeah, the odds are this was a point that he could have, but he had a story to tell, and that's the reason why it's like it makes more sense to do it in story.
But my point of bringing that up is because, look, Jeremy knows how to write Hal. We've seen it. Jeremy is great at tying in the rest of the DC universe just for little one-offs, like the Phantom Stranger and Zariel issue and stuff like that, or the Flash issue or whatever. There's lots of great little tie-ins to the DCU. He pulled in a freaking Millennium reference with Tom Kalmaku and stuff like that. He circled back to it. He took the time to say, you know what? No, DC, I'm going to respect, you know, even if you, me, him, anybody doesn't like the Thorn run, it's something in continuity that we're going to work with. We're going to work with that and work around that. We're going to work with what Philip Kennedy Johnson is doing over here. We're going to tie in this and tie in that. We're going to circle back a little bit to Lights Out and pull from here and pull from there. But so I think that's what at the core of this all frustrates me with this arc and this series thus far, because it seems like it's just exponentially getting more and more frustrating, is you really get the sense that he can do this. We've seen it before in spurts, or in like a single issue is just really great, or you know, this particular, you know, characterization, or this conversation between Carol or Hal or whatever, whoever he has talking in a nice moment, between that conversation between Barry and Hal on that rooftop in issue 4 or whatever it was. You know, he has the ability to do this, and he's making the effort to say, you know what, I'm not just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm going to try and make something of this. But he's not doing the best job. And Look, I'm not, and we'll get to it in a future episode, I'm not absolute Green Lanterning this series, but this is getting further and further down my to-read pile every week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just mostly reading, or almost exclusively right now, reading Green Lantern, so I guess I can't really argue the point. It's just a matter of, you know, kind of like shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic, which one of these books you like the most or the least. And in a way, until as long as Jeremy's co-writing core, the reality is the books are kind of have to be viewed as one and the same for the most part, because one hand is steering the wheel for both ships, kind of like Robert Venditti was to the very end. You know, timing wise was unfortunate for Van Jensen, as he was just spreading his wings and his stories were getting really good. But it's kind of like that. It's like until that happens, that Hampton gets to write this book on his own without Jeremy, you know, either co-plotting or if not actually co-scripting, but co-plotting.
It should. I think they announced it. It's like issue 10, I think, or 11.
I thought so, too. That's why I'm. I thought that they are kind of like going separate ways. So, but until that happens, we have to view almost like the core and the regular GL book is one and the same. And then, you know, Absolute, which we're not, which we are definitely losing steam with and not fans of at the moment, and Absolute's about to end. So, yeah, I don't know. It's disappointing because, again, like you mentioned, there are some good things here. And, you know, even in an artwork issue, which for the most part I didn't like. I mean, but, you know, St. Walker's drawn well, and John Stewart continues to be. Mm-hmm. Certain characters are drawn well, certain characters are not. But that splash page, that homage to, like, GL25 was like really bad. I thought the art for the most part was. There were some cool moments in it, like, you know, like Dexter and things like that. But, and it's kind of funny, you know, Kyle does nothing. Doesn't go white again. The entire spectrum is reignited. He can't. And you would think it's back together again, supposedly. Maybe that means he can't. Again, the rules of how Kyle can become a White Lantern again. Let's move beyond the fact that theoretically the entity is probably still inside him. Another question we don't know about. It was him, because maybe you were. Oh yeah, you know, the entity left like 5 minutes after it brought Kyle back. We're probably going to get that explanation too down the road. But Jessica, who does absolutely nothing. Hey, the leader of the Corps, who has done nothing for like the last umpteen issues. I don't know. It's tough. It's kind of a hard read. The Krona thing will be interesting. The question is, how long are we going to have to wait until we actually get till any of this comes to fruition with Krona? And like I said, is he going to be stuck permanently in this, you know, warped version of Hal's body, or is he going to be able to come up with another matrix to be able to get himself a final 7-10% and get himself over the top? But other than that, I don't know, because we know he's going to be on, right? He's going to be on Earth soon, looking into the mystery of the Book of Oa, with having his name in the pages, which is probably related to Krona. I mean, like Krona's up to. But still, I mean, I don't know. It seems like there's so many unanswered. Again, that seems to be the common thread here. Unanswered questions, and even when you do get answers to some questions, the majority of the time they're not satisfying. So the John Stewart ending was nice just because it puts a period at the end of a sentence it's a dangling participle that's been out there for a long time. And it's like, now we finally get the real John Stewart back. So that's a plus.
And not to mention, this is our second official arc. And the solution last time was we didn't actually defeat our villain. They went to another universe, and they'll be back.
We closed the doors. They closed doors.
Yeah. And the same thing happens here. We didn't actually deal with the problem. So what's the point in starting off a big threat if you're just going to keep kicking? You're literally, first of all, the way in which you're telling the story is dragging out and kicking the can down the road and asking more questions and more questions and more questions, only to never defeat the villain ever in any real sense. So you're just kicking the can further. How far can you kick the can?
Maybe he's got this big storyline coming where Starbreakers team up with Theros.
I'm not interested.
Neither am I.
All right, what's next?
All right, so I have a few things that I've seen. I'll make it relatively quick. In the theaters, I had an interesting double feature last week of American Werewolf in London, followed by Tron Ares. and probably not that much of a surprise that American Werewolf in London was the winner of the two. No matter how many times I'd seen that already, I enjoyed it. It was, we had a pretty decent crowd for that. So that was cool, actually. Tron Ares, well, you know, at the end of the day, Tron is what Tron is. And at least as far as how Disney handles it, that at the end of the day, it's really not a franchise. It's never been successful. Tron Legacy wasn't a disaster by any stretch of the imagination financially, but it didn't make tons of money either. It was good. I think Tron Legacy is the better of the three movies. I actually watched the original the other night on Disney Plus, and I could understand why it didn't do. I'd seen parts of it before. I honestly can't tell you I've ever seen the whole thing from beginning to end. So I can understand why that movie didn't do well back in its day, regardless of the special effects. And Tron Ares is okay. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, well, let me take that back. There might be some things wrong with it. You can nitpick it. I'm not going to nitpick it all that much. It is garbage for people to be focusing in on Jared Leto, because he's not the reason why that movie has not worked financially. That I don't think that movie would have worked no matter who they put in the lead. And it was an odd choice, too. That it's a movie that clearly exists in a world where the events of Tron Legacy did take place, because there's multiple references throughout the movie through newspaper clippings and pictures of Sam and Korra, but neither Sam nor Korra are in the movie as their actors or doing anything in the movie, nor do they play anything, have anything significant to do with the plot point, other than Sam pointed the woman who's running NCOM now was one of the two sisters that Sam basically handpicked to take the company over after his time as CEO ended. But other than that, though, they hint at the end of the movie that if there was another movie, which you could almost take to the bank thanks to the financial woes of this one that we're never going to get, that they'd certainly have a plan under the right circumstances to tie directly more the events of our Tron Ares into Tron Legacy. But needless to say. So it's okay. I mean, I'm sure seeing it in 3D, which I didn't do, or seeing it in IMAX would be pretty impressive visually. But it's okay. I generally speaking don't think it's something certainly from a plot perspective that you need to see in a theater. And I finished Peacemaker. You know, the final episode of Peacemaker just dropped. And the reality is, I think there's at least nice symmetry there, because the two episodes I liked the least were episode 1 and episode 8, the first and the last. I really liked episodes 2 through 7, even with James Gunn inserting, you know, James Gunn-isms and his politics and his strange, you know, James Gunn's humor is just, it's like, he can't rein himself in sometimes. He just can't help doing things that are kind of inappropriate, just because he, especially now that he's running the studio, it's the emperor has holes in his underwear thing. It's like there's nobody around probably to tell him no, even when he should be told no, or at least someone who has his ear who we trust, that if it's like, I don't think you should do that he would probably take it more to heart. But overall, I liked the season. I don't think it was as good as the first season. I don't necessarily like what they were setting up for the DCU, I don't necessarily think I care all that much about. And I don't necessarily like what they did with Rick Flagg as a character, Rick Flagg Sr. So it is what it is. And that is pretty much it. I'm not going to be seeing anything new for a while. We did see Prince of Darkness, too, by the time we're recording this. Technically, John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness was another Regal Screams movie that they put out. We saw that last night. That actually had a pretty good crowd in it for a 7:40 movie on a Wednesday. That had a pretty decent crowd, but I don't think there's anything new coming. I just think I'm seeing a lot of these horror movies that they're putting out, re-releasing Event Horizon and the Lon Chaney Jr. Wolfman is next week. So, but that's it. That's all I got.
Well, Green Lantern tying in to something you just mentioned. How did you like the soundtrack of Tron Ares?
It was good, but it's not Daft Punk Tron Legacy good. Not for me anyway. That almost like took on a life of its own. That almost was like an organic being, that soundtrack in Tron Legacy. I thought it was,
for those of you playing along at home, there's the new Nine Inch Nails music was made for that movie. So there's a whole album I got the vinyl, so it's like it's a two vinyl set, by the way. That's how much new music from Nine Inch Nails there is. And for those of you wondering why I mentioned Green Lantern, don't forget when Kyle left the bar and when Ganthet threw him the ring, he was wearing a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt.
as he was whizzing against the wall. But yeah, I don't think I would say that it's as good as Daft Punk, nor do I think it captures the essence probably of the movie the way Daft Punk soundtrack did. That soundtrack was really, really, really good. And I think the visuals in Tron Legacy were actually probably a little better than the visuals in Ares. Some of the stuff, from the stuff when the grid stuff comes into the real world, some of those things are cool, even though, again, you see a lot of that in the trailer. You don't see all of it, but you see a lot of those scenes in the trailer. And there's not as much, I don't think there's as much action or as much of the, especially when you get the context for why that happens, it's not nearly as intriguing, I think, either storytelling wise. So it's.
Yeah. Did you have anything else?
No, I think we're good other than rolling into
I had one thing real quick.
Yes. Oh, before we roll into the McFarlane. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. So for those of you who may not be aware, a little while back, DC did a crossover comics wise with the Sonic universe. And that has now resulted in merchandise because you have Sonic dressed as the Flash. You have Knuckles dressed as Superman, Shadow dressed as Batman, Amy dressed as Wonder Woman, and Silver dressed as Green Lantern. This, I am seeing action figures, I am seeing Funko Pops, and while I do see a couple of plushes, I do only see Shadow as Batman and Sonic as Flash, but I'm not seeing any other plushes, but I would imagine if they, I'm sure they exist out there. So if you have kids or something who are into Sonic, or you just collect anything Green Lantern related, no matter what, these are out there in the wild now. I've seen Donnie over Emerald Enthusiast, over from Emerald Echo, when he posts his little reviews, he's finding these out in the wild. So if you're collecting just any Green Lantern stuff, or you know somebody who's into Sonic, or you're into Sonic, there are some stuff, and then I believe these are mostly found, I think they're just in the wild anywhere, but I think it's Target is where most people are seeing them. So just in terms of new Green Lantern merchandise, that is out there. But, up to you if you're interested in it. But speaking of figures.
Yes.
All right. What's our last topic for the night?
Maybe we should call this like a tragedy in three acts. have you ever heard the tragedy of Darth McFarlane the Unwise? So today, as we're actually recording this in a timely fashion, today on the Friday the 10th, this was the day that the McFarlane cover recreation, that's the actual Green Lantern Emerald Twilight Gold Label 7-inch figure McFarlane cover recreation. Blah blah blah. Yeah,
do the Green Lantern issue number 49.
Number 49. Do the Charlie Brown teacher's voice. Wah 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 wah. That this today was the magic day at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, and of course 9 Central. That this sucker was supposed to launch, drop, on Walmart on their site. Now, as far as we knew, we only go in chronological order here, so I won't get ahead of myself. But so I'll let you get the ball rolling on to make sure that I don't overstep my bounds and how you want to relay the story to as we roll into the first act of how this unfolded on 10-10.
Yeah. So I don't clock in till 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. But lately I've been getting in the habit of getting up earlier so I can make my breakfast and do various things. Well, I did this the day before, yesterday, because Funko was doing a drop for their New York Comic Con exclusives, and I needed to pick up Null. So I went on the line just like I did with, you know, with anything else. It's been a while since I've been a part of an early drop on a Funko on Funko's website, but they had a countdown. They put up the items a few minutes before so that you could go to the individual item. And then it went live. So add to cart. I clicked add. I was done in 5 minutes. I was online maybe about 15 minutes too early, just because in the past it is possible for an early drop to occur, not by a significant margin, but a couple of minutes. It's never like sometimes it's not on the dot. For Funko, it was on the dot. So I was look. I was feeling good. I got my null. All right. Tomorrow, Friday, I'll be able to get. I'll be able to get this Emerald Twilight figure. It's a different website, but let's figure it out. So before I went to bed on Thursday night, I opened Walmart.com in a browser. I logged into my account to make sure that all my information was in there. And then I put my computer into sleep mode so that all I would have to do is wake up in the morning, refresh the page, look at it. Right. So I'm dog sitting my sister's family dog. And I wake up to, as part of my early morning routine now, just because I'm dog sitting, I'm going to take him out in the morning. So I wake up, it's about 8 o'clock or so. I get ready. I put on a couple of clothes and my sandals. I'm about to step out the door, but it's, you know, about like 8:10 or so. I check the website just to make sure. The only thing that has changed is that it's still, instead of saying, this figure will release on 10/10 at 7 a.m. PT. That has gone away, and it doesn't show add to cart, but it just shows not available, not available, not available for like shipping, in-store pickup, and whatever the third option is.
Delivery.
Yeah.
Shipping pickup delivery.
Yeah, shipping pickup delivery. It just says not available. There's no add to cart. That's the only thing that's changed, but you know, we're within an hour or whatever, so I expect that to happen. Okay, great. About 8:13 or so, I step out my front door and I pulled my phone out of my pocket and I send Mark a message. I said 45 minutes, right? Basically, this thing's going to drop in 45 minutes, right? Because I'm walking the dog down the stairs to go take a piss, right? So
the dog, says, not Chad.
he says it's actually online right now. You can take it from there. But yes, that's so at the same time, just by luck of the draw, I don't know if you were you already looking at it when I sent you that message?
No. This is, and I'll give ever so briefly my background because we don't want to hijack from the rest of the story for either one of us. But I had to get up today anyway because I had a haircut at 10:30 my time. So this thing was dropping at 10 my time. So again, same thing. The way I'm hooked up to Walmart, it's the reality is it should have been like a two-step process. As soon as it was available, I add it to your cart, just hit checkout, and I don't even have to go to any payment. It's hooked to my PayPal thing, so it just goes 1, 2, 3. So my plan was to be, you know, sitting at the computer maybe like a minute or two before 10 o'clock. I was up early by luck of the draw because I thought I normally have two alarms set, and I inconveniently set off. Turned off the first one, but I woke up before the first one anyway, and I just got out of bed. Thank God, because I didn't have it set. But I fed the cats. I was getting ready to jump in the shower, so that's when I made my way back into the computer, like around nine fifteen. And then I saw your message, and I was about to respond to you, and that's when I typed it back into my browser and recognized it. I already had the link bookmarked too, but I just typed it in. I saw the link. I hit enter. And then it said it was available. So I just went, I added two to my cart real quick, boom, 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 finished the transaction. That's when I messaged Chad back and said, exactly, it's live now. And then you shortly thereafter, you went back in to get yours. And I didn't pay attention to if it was showing the percentage of, that was available at the time.
It was not.
Yeah, because I don't think when I bought it, I don't think it did. Because even after, as this process was playing out, sometimes when you refresh the browser, it didn't always show you how much was available. But so maybe it's possible it still was. Maybe it still said like 80%, 90% available. Or I got in so early that they didn't bother showing you how much, what percent was still available. But then Chad got his, and then we kept watching this play out. So I'll hand the baton back to you as we're like hitting like 9:20-ish or something now in the story.
Yeah. So, so I check out and my webpage is loading. And mind you, I'm walking the dog. So I'm doing all this on my phone. I'd planned to be on my computer, but it's too late. I'm out the door. I'm doing this on my phone. So all my preparation, I guess, goes out the window of setting up my browser before I went to sleep the night before. So it drops basically, I want to say 8:13 a.m. Central Standard Time, EST 9:13, right? So almost over a full 45 minutes early, when we start refreshing and checking on this thing because we're like, oh, what's going on? I'm sending things out on like Twitter and Blue Sky saying it's live now. Go, 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 go.
Go now.
And for all the good it does, because it's early, right?
Right.
By 8:26, it shows 70% sold. 4 minutes later, it's completely sold out. So this thing is supposed to drop 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, because it said it was dropping 10:10, 7 a.m. PT. It dropped and sold out a full half hour before they told us it was supposed to drop. So anybody who did any due diligence in preparation for this, just so that they could wake up and be ready to buy, were already SOL before anyone would reasonably look at their computer. But that's why I mentioned the Funko story, because I, even though they've been historically a little better about dropping on time as opposed to early, we all put a buffer sometimes of like, oh, it's possible for things to go live 5-10 minutes early or something. So we're, you know, lots of people who do this sit in front of the computer a little earlier. Not everybody does, because not everybody's experienced with pre-orders and online things like this. And a full half hour before something is supposed to drop and just being ready for it anyways is crazy. I was just part of my morning routine and I just refreshed to look to make sure the my internet was still connected, Safari didn't go out, like whatever the hell. I'm just making sure that everything is optimal and I'm ready to go. But it dropped and sold out 30 minutes before the original time. Insane. Yeah.
It is. It's a complete screw job. No matter how you want to, I mean, there's only really one or two explanations here. Neither are acceptable, by the way. But there's only, objectively speaking, there's one or two explanations. Number one, they screwed up to begin with on the time that it was supposed to be available, as of how what the time that they listed the wrong time, and either nobody caught it or if they did catch it, it's like, well, it's been out here so long with the wrong time, even though we know it hasn't really been out there that long. But the point is, it's like, if the damage is already done, let's not change it. I don't buy that one. It could, but the possibility could be that there was the wrong time, a typo listed to what time it was supposed to go live. But 9:15, let's be honest, 9:15 is a really odd time for something to drop anyway. Or 10:15, 7:15. Either way, it's kind of odd. They usually make it a round number. The other possibility is if somebody just literally screwed up on Walmart's end, that coding-wise, that when the link was supposed to be active for purchase, it was supposed to go live at a certain time, and the wrong time was put in. It was programmed incorrectly. Now, I thought about this after the fact. If you really want to be cynical, you could say there's a third option, which is that some of the big hoarders, the eBayers, have a connection with Walmart, and they basically paid them off to drop it early. Just let me know. It's like, could you drop this thing like 45 minutes early? Just let me know right before it goes live. It's like, yeah, I can do that. Boom. But yeah, so the whole point was, under normal circumstances, I honestly, the earliest I would have gotten to the computer to sit in front of the screen, if I was a normal day, let's say it even was a 1 o'clock or a 2 o'clock drop, which a lot of the Funkos and the NFT Funkos and the stuff on the Funko websites, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock Eastern time is usually the range these things have become available. Even if I'm sitting at my computer at work and I'm planning on getting this stuff, I'm really not going to be watching this and paying much attention to it probably until like bare minimum a half an hour before, most likely 15 minutes before. So even if I had gotten to the computer at 9:45, we already would have been sold out of the sold out in quotes, because we're coming to that. We would have been sold out still like about, you know, 5 to 8 minutes before I even sat down at the computer.
Yeah. Well, so that second part is, we're watching this sellout. I tell the story, whatever. I post it over on Twitter to let people know that it's sold out. And then I decide to copy and paste that same post a few minutes later over to the to Myron's group of the podcast and blog of OWA over on Facebook to let them know. And everybody's like, well, great. And shares their own little, sympathies of I'm not surprised, essentially, because, you know, McFarland and or Walmart are both apparently are known for doing this kind of stuff, according to various comments I've seen across a couple of different social media platforms. But then in the midst of paying attention to all this, there's news that there's going to be a live stream from the New York Comic Con floor, the Walmart booth with Todd McFarlane. So we go on there, and it starts at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time.
And they were late anyway for that, too. Not by much, but they were a little late.
Yeah. They go live, and they're talking about Avatar figures. They're talking about some freaking new Spawn figures and, you know,
Mortal Kombat, wasn't it?
Mortal Kombat as well. And then also talking a bit about some DC stuff. Mark and I are both watching it because I sent him the link that this was happening. That this is, you know, we're looking for the figure, at the very least talk about the figure, hoping that they're going to acknowledge the comments, which is not going to happen, about what the hell are you guys thinking about dropping it 45 minutes early that are in the live chat, one of which is me. And they, of course, don't acknowledge it. But during said live stream, the figure goes live again.
Because there's links underneath the bottom of the screen which you can hit the arrow to scroll through of all pretty much all the exclusives that there are. Not everything they didn't show anything that there weren't links for, I don't think. But either way, basically what they were talking about, all the exclusives that were dropping at Walmart that day, they had the links on the bottom of the screen. And that's essentially how we found out that these things now all of a sudden were not sold out.
Yeah, we noticed this maybe about 10 minutes into the live stream or so. That counter goes up again, and about 12 minutes into this live stream, it shows 92% gone. But then it refreshes itself. I don't know if it's going off of old information or they updated something or whatever. It goes back down, and Mark and I notice it's like 60% or something
Yeah.
And then before the live stream ends, it's sold out again. Was it after the live stream ends or during?
I think it was after. I think it was after. I think the final one sold out after, I believe. Not by long. It didn't take too long. It was a couple of times because we kept refreshing. We kept watching these go into the 90 percentile. And then I still had technically had one more in my cart because I ordered two originally. And
yeah. At 11:19, you said there's still more. I just checked again. Only 65.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it went back down to 65 and then it went back up to 95 by 11:36. So, yeah, just after the live stream, I think. And as of right then,
But before we do the then,
go ahead.
We speak currently, because there is no epilogue right now on the Walmart site, because it still remains sold out as in not available. Now, I should say sold out, to be honest with you. If it actually was sold out and they're not getting it back in, which just doesn't mean that they won't, then at least they sold out. Or for today, they should have said sold out, because I remember Daryl Banks himself, when I was talking to Daryl, as soon as we knew it was live, after I told you, I told Daryl, because one of the reasons why I ordered two is because I tend to get anything Parallax or Emerald Twilight related for Daryl to make sure he has it. And we'll talk about the need for that, too. Or there shouldn't be one, the reality based on the way things work in the industry. Yeah. But the point was, by the time he went back and checked, he got in like right around 9:45, and he said, it still says not available to me. And that's when I said, yeah, because it sold out. But you'd never know that it went live and sold out because the friggin' website doesn't tell you that. But as we speak, Walmart still remains from that early afternoon sellout on the 10th. They are still sold out.
And then the third part happened. The third part being that apparently this is not just a Walmart exclusive, but also something that you can buy on McFarlane's website, which they didn't do a great job of advertising. But then I start seeing these comments popping up of going, got mine over on McFarland. And I saw one or two over on Twitter, and then somebody in that thread over on Myron's page responded saying, I got mine on McFarland. I asked for the link and I got it. And this, we're recording this just, it is 9:17 p.m. right now, Friday night, Central Standard Time. This is, it's, by the time you guys hear this, it's got to be sold out by now. There's no way.
In all likelihood, but yes, you were correct. As of today, as of now, live as we're recording this Friday night, this sucker's still available, and it's been available pretty much for like about 6 or 7 hours at least.
Yeah, on McFarlane's website. So this is the most ass-backwards release I've ever seen, to the point where I saw people, and granted, everybody's frustrated. Let's just be 100% honest. This is just a massive coincidence that Mark and I were able to even get one, because as both of us just told you in our stories, neither of us would have planned to be in front of the computer that early. Nope. It just so happens to be kismet. But so I can completely empathize, and I wanted the figure. I know how much more than I do Mark wanted the figure. So we would be furious if we didn't get a chance to do this and we showed up late. So I feel you, but these people were also throwing out, no wonder McFarland is losing the license.
which I think in that moment, I think was a little bit unfair, because I would say this, I would suspect, even though now that we know it's available on the McFarland site, it makes me change my mind a little bit about this. But at the time, I thought that was a little unfair, because this almost has to be a Walmart F up. One way or the other. I mean, because, again, somebody made it go live when it shouldn't have gone live. Conceptually, it made sense if you were going to be having a live chat, which I don't think they promoted ahead, way, way ahead of time they were doing this either. But they could have been, but I didn't. I don't think you and I knew it, that if they were going to be doing a promo, it's kind of like if you're doing something on QVC or Home Shopping Network. If you know somebody's coming on to push the item, that even if you and you only have a certain number of items to sell throughout the entire day, units, then you're going to make sure you have a decent chunk left over for when that person comes on and sells it. Especially if they say they're coming on twice a day, so they come on in the morning, and then there's a gap, and they come on. They do that like a lot on QVC and Home Shopping Network. So they want to make sure they have more stock in when you're doing the second push. So it made sense conceptually they would have some of it. They would have certain amount they would sell, but in the beginning, and then they would have a little bit more for when McFarlane was coming on. Not that he actually ever talked about the Emerald Twilight figure, which is another kick to the groin, as all the other figures they're talking about, including Joker Eyes, Superman, and all these friggin' Mortal Kombat figures, so I could give 3 pounds of monkey crap about. They don't even show or mention the Emerald Twilight figure, and Chad and I were sure they were doing it, going to, because they were rolling through the DC figures.
Yeah,
but the bigger cluster about the stuff in the morning, about having the extra, having it not unsell out, was just the fact that the thing launched early. That was the big cluster about this. I mean, I did actually think it was cool about how Todd McMahon, when Todd mentioned the fact that other than Toys R Us, like the main company in the beginning when he first started his toy company, that really basically partnered with him and kind of helped keep him in business and get to put the more irons in the fire, was Walmart. So he kind of, so the idea that might legitimately explain why there's a certain penchant for Walmart having a lot more exclusives, it seems, than other retail stores, or shared exclusives, because he feels a sense of loyalty to them, besides money, clearly. But there's a sense, but based on the way he was talking, it seemed like there was a personal connection he has and an appreciation of how Walmart helped him when they didn't necessarily have to in the beginning, and that kind of, so that I think that might explain why they get as many shared exclusives as they get.
I mean, it's just a smart business decision.
Oh, of course it is. But
to trust the cachet of the name McFarlane in the 90s.
Well, yeah, but he was just a comic book writer / artist at the time. So yeah. Him starting a new toy company is something else, and especially when it's not like he had you know, he didn't have these huge major licenses with a lot of stuff to start with.
But he had Spawn, so.
Well, yeah, he had his own. You were correct. He had Spawn, but I mean branching out into doing other stuff, like his versions are like the Universal Monsters. Mm-hmm. I remember that was one of the first expansions that he did. Like he did versions of Phantom of the Opera or anything, Creature from the Black Lagoon and Dracula and things like that. But it was the disappointing part in all of this from a sales, again, it's the confusion. It's the fact that, I mean, people, it wouldn't have been it still would have been absolutely wrong, but it wouldn't have been as huge a deal if it was made perfectly clear that Walmart was basically just getting the first window to sell these, but they weren't the only place to get them. Because then the fact that they sold out early, double early in all caps, because of the fact that it never should have been on sale yet and it already sold out, it wouldn't have been as much of a grab the torches and the pitchforks moment if you would have realized, oh yeah, in 2 hours we're going to have more of them on Walmart, but another like 3 hours are going to be available. We got plenty of them. We have plenty of them. Don't worry about it.
Well, yeah, not to mention the actual product link on Walmart.com for this figure was live like a week, 2 weeks before.
I think it was only like
the link was everywhere.
Yeah. The link. Yeah. And I think that's what the deal was. I think they were just being given the exclusive window and to sell these. And who knows? Maybe there was something behind the scenes that there was a reason in particular. Maybe the live chat wasn't. Maybe the live chat wasn't completely planned, and then they were able to do something. They were able to arrange it rather late in the game, so they figured it to space things out.
Maybe McFarlane, knowing they had their own stock set aside for it, maybe they're like, hey, here's some of what we had allocated for ourselves to make good on the draw. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing which is interesting about this, relating to that, and again, which is why your fear, I'm not saying it's illogical or unfounded in certain instances, your fear that these orders are going to be canceled, one of the reasons I don't think it's going to happen is if you actually go look at your order at Walmart and you go look at the track, it says that this is being sold and shipped by McFarlane.
Yeah.
So basically, Walmart's just the middleman on this, and they're as far as from a probably a shipping perspective and a where the stock is coming from perspective. So it is possible. It is possible McFarlane, they did ship some, they did have some, or they always had extra stock. They just didn't, for some reason they moved the sale up, which they shouldn't have. And then because they moved it up or felt compelled for a different reason, maybe that's why they decided to add some extra stock in. But the fact that this is available now, at least as on late Friday night, that is a plus, because again, working under the premise that even if, yes, you were correct, if we were not where we were, we never would have gotten these immediately. You got one, I ordered two because I got one, and I got one for Daryl just in case he wasn't able to get one. Luckily, Daryl was able to order one from the McFarlane site once I gave him that link. But, and then when I went back live again during McFarlane's chat, I ordered one more. So that one's for Jim. And then now I guess I'm going to get to, it looks like I'm going to get to keep two. So I'll probably keep one in the box and open one.
There's some already on eBay. There was one for the lowest price is $75.99, then a $99.99, then $109.99. It's ridiculous.
Which is even worse, taking it again, because of how this is being marketed. It's taking advantage of people, because if you thought it was only a Walmart exclusive and you only had that link, then you would think, yeah, maybe I will pay that because it's sold out. But not knowing, all you have to do currently at 10:26 p.m. Eastern time on Friday night, just freaking go to the McFarlane site and you can order. I forget if there is a cap on this, but you certainly could order a couple.
Yeah, and I just want to take time out to say this was part of their collector con or whatever they called it for Walmart. Yeah. There were other things. I did not check on the other products. However, by the keyword searches that I was doing on Twitter and stuff, because Twitter is usually the best place for like live reactions if you're going to like sort of social media feed by most recent and search certain keywords. So I go over to Twitter and just search that. Apparently the same thing also happened with the Man Bat that they had, which as an Batman the Animated Series fan, right. I enjoy. I would have got that if I could, but no. Also, I think it's worth mentioning just really quick, because there's no point in really getting into it, but they also, just because we're talking about McFarlane, they announced today a new Page Puncher Hal figure with an issue of Green Lanterns. And apparently they're also doing the Platinum Chase versions for Page Punchers as well, which is like the little 4-inch figures that come with a copy of the comic book. And the variant is Jessica. So that'll be in spring of 2026. And then they're also doing they announced the wave of figures, regular McFarlane-sized figures, that are coming winter of this year. One is Lar Flees, which it's a blurry photo from a presentation, but it looks fairly good. The other, relatively connected, Rocket Red. There's going to be a Rocket Red figure. So
yeah, that could be cool too.
But so McFarlane was in the news today doing their thing.
I'm glad Daryl was able to order his, and like I said, we had his back no matter what, as far as I had one for him. But the reality is, especially considering what this is, considering it's one of them, it is a, you know, famous covers recreation of one of the most, literally one of the most, certainly one of the most famous covers, like in the last 30, 40 years. Something that's been homaged and aped so many times. That, and the fact that McFarlane himself is a writer and an artist, that at the very least, that he shouldn't have to be buying this crap to begin with. They should be sending him at least, forget about that. I mean, you can make a case, they should be sending him a case, but the reality is they should at the very least be sending him at least one of these things. I mean, it's kind of...
I always thought it would be cool if you're going to do something where it bases the figures. Arguably, you could say do this for just any figure if the creator is still alive. But especially if you're going to ape the style that it's done in for something like this, why not collaborate with the artists and have them...
Sign
a bunch of them, yep, that are either exclusive release, or you include them like chase figures. You know, somebody opens up the toy and they find a rare Daryl Banks signed card inside of it or something. You know, like, I don't know. Like, why not collaborate like that? I guess then you'd have to pay them, and people are just trying to maximize profits. But I don't know. Like you mentioned, McFarlane's an artist. I think he's an artist. I think he's always talking about that industry and standing by it. So like,
yeah, I mean, I was, and I've talked to Daryl a lot over the last week about ever since they dropped this figure. Cause, we knew specifically, yes, the mystery was gone, that this was the figure we were getting. It was Green Lantern 49, and we had the Walmart link, and that a lot of people, which is probably why he didn't get a chance to respond to your question about, which I think we know the answer to, about whether he got anything out of this. I think everybody that day kind of like posted links to, as soon as they saw it, they sent links to him because he said, like, basically his you know, his DMs or PMs were kind of like blown up with people sending him the link. But he and I were talking and we were just talking in general about some of these figures, about, because obviously we're talking McFarlane, so going back to you know, the two Parallaxes that we've gotten, neither one which are fantastic by any stretch of the imagination, but the Zero Hour one, the sec being the better one, that we were talking about the idea, hey, we're getting it would really be nice to get a comics accurate version of Parallax, since we certainly didn't during the McFarlane run. And let's be honest, leaving the Funko Pop aside, which is perfect, pretty much, that it's not really an action figure. So moving that aside, the DC, the Green Lantern Wave 1, which is post-Green Lantern Rebirth Parallax, is the only really comic accurate Parallax we've ever gotten in any form. I mean, I love the Total Justice figure, but it's not 100% comic accurate for its time. I mean, it's a great head sculpt. It's a fantastic Hal Jordan head sculpt. It absolutely looks like Parallax, but we haven't gotten much Parallax to begin with, and most of what we've gotten has not been accurate. So in a way, because McFarlane, you know, they're running out of time anyway. I mean, they're on the clock.
Yeah,
it might be better that the license is going to shift back to Mattel, because Mattel has done fantastic lanterns and they've never done a Parallax. So if there probably is a decent shot that we might get, think about, I mean, not that I would want it to go this way, because it would be a pain in the ass if you wanted both, but they could very easily do Hal Jordan Green Lantern Parallax and have the Kyle Parallax. Or even if not, that would be the best, because we haven't had Kyle Parallax in a full figure form. We had the mini one, but we didn't get a full one. Mm-hmm. But even do a Sinestro one as a chase figure. Not that, again, that I would want that, because I'd like the opportunity to realistically be able to get both of them. But they could do something like that, just do Hal Jordan Parallax be the main figure, and then but I would have more faith if we're going to get it. I'm kind of glad the license might be shifting back to Mattel, because they're, you know, their DC Universe lines, they did a damn good job doing all the colored lanterns. And they gave us a lot of cool ones that we didn't, the only Sodom Yat figure we ever got was from them. So they did a really good job. So it may not be a bad thing. I mean, we've gotten a lot of lantern stuff this year from McFarlane. And to be fair, the majority of it this year has been pretty good compared to some of the stuff in the past, like that horrible first Kyle on the sliding scale. And, you know, the first Parallax was really bad. But it's wrong for them to kind of like stiff arm people in the industry, especially when you're aping a cover like this. It's like, if anything, it's like, just send them a friggin' case of figures, for God's sake. Is it asking a lot? Just send them a case of figures.
Yeah, I think that's bare minimum, but maybe Mattel will do better. You're right about Mattel. I still to this day never quite pull the trigger anytime I see it, but that Walmart exclusive, like, what was it, like a 8-pack or whatever, or 6-pack of Green Lantern?
Oh, I remember that. I never got that either, but because I had most of those figures. But yeah, that was very nice. That was very nicely done.
Yeah, so that was fun. And then that 2-pack of Blue Kyle and Yellow Hal.
I have that, and they're the ones that gave us the Red Lantern and Yellow Lanterns with the swappable heads and hands and heads. They gave us the awesome Build-A-Figure, Arkillo, and
They also gave us that multi-pack in the one blister that came with like Dexstar and Badge and.
Oh yeah, that's true too. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's where my Dexstar is from.
Dexstar is from the Mera figure from Blackest Night.
Mine has to be from Mattel then, because I never opened Mera, so I don't think. Yeah. So yeah, Mattel did fantastic. The White Lantern Hal, White Lantern Flash, I still think that John Stewart figure they made in one of their lantern waves, or one of the waves that had lanterns in it, was one of the best. I think it's the best John Stewart figure that was ever made.
Yeah.
Abin. So they did. Yeah. So if their work is the same as the Batman, I think they did the Batman. I think they did the Yellow Lantern Batman first too.
Yeah, they did lots of good ones.
Yeah. So if they go back and do the same kind of work, the same kind of quality, then I think we're going to be in business. But
I think that's it, guys. Just a bunch of disappointment coming at you this way this entire episode. But anyways, if people want to reach out to us and tell us their experience trying to find this figure or want to talk about Core Number 9 wrapping up this arc, what do they do?
LanternCast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Facebook, #GLCast, to track us down. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.